WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media
ABC app. ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. No, Kevin McCarthy is not resigning from Congress after being ousted as Speaker.
I'm going to keep the majority. I'm going to help the people I got here, and we're going to expand it further.
And he says he'll run for re-election. Some Republicans want funding to Ukraine out of a new federal budget, but the Ukrainian government says it could run out of ammunition before Congress agrees to a spending plan. Striking auto workers will not expand their walkout this week. President Sean Fain says GM's agreement to unionize electric vehicle battery plants is a significant progress. Still no deal for tens of thousands of Kaiser Permanente health workers demanding better pay and working conditions. Their three-day strike ends tomorrow morning. A liberal-leaning Wisconsin Supreme Court justice is refusing to recuse herself from two redistricting lawsuits. Justice Janice Protasiewicz called the districts rigged. Republicans who control the legislature and drew the maps are threatening to impeach her. This is ABC News. Newly on this foreign visitor's itinerary, a stay on the government's dime that's still costly.
An American tourist in custody after shattering two ancient statues of Roman gods during his visit to the Israel Museum. Police say the suspect called the nearly 2,000-year-old statues, quote, blasphemous and a violation of the Torah, or Old Testament. In court, the defendant's lawyer says his client may be suffering from Jerusalem syndrome. That's an exceedingly rare psychotic disorder that causes visitors here to the Holy City to believe they're characters from the Bible. The American set to undergo a psychiatric evaluation. Jordana Miller, ABC News, Jerusalem.
A former U.S. Army sergeant's been arrested today, accused of offering classified information to China. The Justice Department says Joseph Schmidt reached out to Chinese diplomats offering encryption information for the Army's classified information network. He was arrested as he arrived at San Francisco International Airport from Hong Kong. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Civic Media radio stations providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
For the Talk of Green Bay News, I'm Pete Schwaba. Here's what you need to know.
The search on the Fox River for a 21-year-old Green Bay man has been suspended by the Coast Guard. The search for Victor Torres Guadalupe started about 2 a.m. on Wednesday, but authorities decided they didn't have enough evidence showing he had entered the water. They are asking for the public's help in finding him. He is 5'10", about 155 pounds, has black hair and brown eyes. Anyone with helpful information should call the Green Bay Police Department.
The man who created the G logo on Packer helmets has died. John Gordon designed the iconic G while he was an art student at St. Norbert College in the early 60s. He was asked to design a logo that resembled a football by a St. Norbert equipment manager. He passed away Saturday at the age of 83 after struggling with Alzheimer's. Tonight's Powerball jackpot is $1.2 billion. That's the third largest ever, and it'll go up slightly after I buy my ticket later. Good luck. Pete Schwaba, WGBW 97.9 News.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
It's the most competitive sport for all to enjoy, and Milwaukee is even the capital for it. It's bowling, and the oldest bowling alley is in Wisconsin. Haller House is home to the two oldest sanctioned lanes in the U.S. and are still made of the wood installed in 1908. The building on West Lincoln in Milwaukee looks the same. Musicians Joe Walsh and Jack White have thrown a ball down those 115-year-old lanes. Now, can you guess the tradition that continues here to this day? A hot beef sandwich, just 25 cents. The pins still set by people? Swear, and you're tossed out. The answer coming up. The fifth and sixth generations run Haller House, so some odd history does remain, like bras hanging from the rafters. The alleys have even been featured in the Wall Street Journal and Sports Illustrated. So what's your guess about the continuing tradition? It's the pins still being set by people. No machines here. These stories make it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
a delicious Honeycrisp, Granny Smith. If you have a favorite apple, now is the time to pick it straight from the source. Did you know Wisconsin has more than 300 apple orchards? Travel Wisconsin recently naming its favorites, including the Oneida National Apple Orchard outside Green Bay, Ferguson's Orchards in Eau Claire, and Apple Holler south of Racine. Many provide tons of family fun in the fall, too. Tire swings, lawn bowling, hay rides, and more. Apple experts suggest if you want to pick yours fresh, do it before the end of October. For Civic Media, I'm Terry.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over, then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Big freaking news. Big day. Big news. Important news. Breaking news. And let's just have Sean Fain, the president of the UAW, just let's start right from the beginning, right with the president of the UAW, giving the good news on the developments of the day.
We have had a major breakthrough that has not only dramatically changed negotiations, but it's going to change the future of our union and the future of our industry. GM has now agreed in writing to place their electric battery manufacturing under our National Master Agreement. What this will mean for our membership cannot be understated. The plan was to draw down engine and transmission plants. We had a different plan. And our plan is winning at GM. And we expect it to win at Ford and Stellantis as well. GM did something that was unthinkable until just today. They agreed to put the future of this industry under our national agreement. This victory is a direct result of the power of our membership. It's your willingness to stand up when called. It's your commitment to winning what you are owed. The companies see it, the world sees it. Today, we made GM say yes when they'd rather say no. Next up is Ford and Stellantis and three record contracts.
You know, good on them. And this, again, this is what going on strike. Sometimes you have to do it. This is what got them to this. But here's my problem in this. They could have done this without a strike. They could have done this without all the suffering and the pain and the chaos that's coming and that's happening. They could have done this because they were going to have to anyway. And why this is such an important, such a big deal is this transition, this technological shift that's going to happen. And it's going to happen regardless of you know, what politics. It's going to happen. We're moving in that direction. But this could be the first time where we have one of these transitions where working people don't end up getting totally screwed. And the fact that they've won this, and hopefully the other two come along, and I think they will. I think they were going to have to, because, you know, as people were telling me, like, this is the battle line. This is a non-starter. We're not going forward unless there is a future to be had. Sure, you can give us good raises now, but if there's no future, no point. Now, as I understood, and I've talked to a number of people today who said, look, you know, there's a lot of good stuff going on. The companies are moving. There's good negotiations happening, which is why you didn't see an expanded expansion of the strike. In fact, you know, one of the threats was, you know, to shut down one of the really profitable GM plants in Arlington that make the Tahoe and that make the Suburban and, you know, the big stuff, the Yukon and the Yukon XL, the Escalade and the Escalade V. You know, you can't shut those down. Them's the money makers. But there are good things happening. You know, two of the three companies have agreed to, you know, to cost of living adjustments. They're moving on wages. They're moving on some benefit stuff. There's good stuff happening here. This is a positive movement after decades of stagnation and decline. And, you know, someone sent me this graph, and we've all seen the graph. Of, you know, from the end of World War II up until the mid to late 70s, how productivity and wages basically walked hand in hand. The more productive workers were, the more productive companies were, the higher wages were. In fact, the number they put out is, you know, productivity from 1947 to 1979 rose at about 119%. Wages, compensation, went up 100%. So as you did more, it was that meritocracy. The more work you do, the more you make. Well, 1979, you know, 1980, something weird happened in 1980. You know, maybe we'll remember something weird happening. You know, like a Republican president coming into office with a whole new economic vision of how to screw the working class. And from 1980 to 2009, productivity went up 80%. Wages, 8. Basically deadlined. That's not even keeping up with inflation. Where did that money go? Well, we know where it went. It went to, you know, enriching the wealth class. It went to making the rich richer, and it made the rest of us poorer. It's what they're calling the Great Regression. You know, we had this era of prosperity where unions were bargaining for better wages, hours, conditions. My grandparents' generation were on the picket lines fighting what we're seeing the same fights today. So I have hope. I have hope that there's a better future for my kids and my grandkids. But today, the job numbers came up. And, you know, the line was jobs. Report stunner, because they weren't expecting 336,000 jobs to be created. I think they were expecting something like 100 and 150, somewhere in that range. And here's the weird thing. No matter what the Fed does, no matter what the Republican Party does, no matter what the rich do to kill our economy, for some reason, it's just steaming right along. But there was a story over at CNN that caught my attention. And it's another reason why I hate CNN and the corporate-controlled mainstream media. Understand, you know, 90% of our media is owned by 6 multinational corporations who don't want to pay higher taxes. So it's got to fit into the frame of, yeah, this is good news, but it's bad for you. The headline, here's why shockingly good jobs report is going to cost you. Here's the story. The U.S. economy feels lousy for so many people. So you'd think some really, really shocking good news, shockingly good news about the job market would give Americans' spirits a boost. Yeah, the job numbers are good. Why wouldn't it give us a boost? Oh, you're gonna rain on our parade, right? Oh, they say it won't, and here's why. Inflation! Got to remind us about inflation. Inflation is still biting. Prices can, and I love this line, this is my favorite line. Prices continue to rise faster than anyone would like. Is there an acceptable limit of things that we would like prices to go up? Are we, I mean, I've heard people complain about a penny when something goes up a penny. So, you know, prices are going up faster than we would like. Now, who raises prices? That's right, corporate America. Whose bottom lines are fatter than ever before? Yeah, that's right, corporate America. Whose CEOs are doing better than they've done almost ever? Oh, that's right, corporate America. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. This job thing is bad because, you know, this inflation's happening. In fact, they point out that inflation's still above 3%. It's not the 9%, but reminding us it's still 3%. Now, they have to remind us that the Fed said, you know, what's ideal is 2%. So we're at 3. 3 is bad. Then they proceed to tell us that the wage growth is 4.2%. And I'm going, hold on. 4.2% wage growth, 3% inflation. Wages are pacing ahead of inflation. That's a good thing. That's what we want. Right? Yeah. That means we're making more money than what we're paying out. That means if we're debtors especially, that's going to help us get out of debt. But no, they don't want us to think like that. No. Because now they're going to remind us that, you know, mortgages are going to go up. They trot out Jamie Dimon. Jamie Dimon says 7% interest rates on mortgages. Credit cards are going to be in the 20% range. And I'm sitting here going, okay, the job numbers are good news. More people are working. Unemployment is, you know, just around 3.5%. That's a good thing. And again, you know, we've got the Fed who's trying to kill the golden goose, who's trying to slam on the brakes. You've got Republicans doing everything they can in Congress to cause a recession because it's literally the only way they're going to hold on to the House. So how can we continue to make good news bad? Oh, that's right. This telling us the economy's horrible. Even though more people are working, more people are getting jobs, wages are going up higher than inflation, we're turning a corner. We're going in a positive direction. But no, that's bad. They write, we should never cheer a bad job market, but a job market that has remained this healthy for this long really isn't excellent news for average Americans struggling to pay their bills. Except when you think that what the Fed wants is them to be unemployed. I mean, it's really quite remarkable when you listen to how they paint good news as bad, because we have to have the frame that, you know, the economy's terrible. We have to have the frame that the sky is falling. And of course, it's Joe Biden's fault. And I've heard this 1,000 times. It's all Joe Biden's fault. And why? Because he's talking about giving workers the right to organize, actually walking a picket line so workers can fight for better wages, hours, conditions, and a just transition, as we just talked about with the UAW. And also, he wants to tax the rich. my favorite thing about the Sean Fain video is the T-shirt that he was wearing. And I love it, that said, eat the rich. At some point, we need to at least tax them. That's not on my palate, but we at least need to be taxing them. Because maybe this perverse incentive to have a news media that keeps telling us the economy, the sky is falling, the economy is dying, the recession is coming, all this bad news that they want us to believe, maybe it stops. And I know, bad news sells, bad news. If it bleeds, it leads. I get that. But this is good news. Even if the CNN businesses of the world think the sky is falling. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Lots to get to today. Wow, lots to get to. Quick break, right back. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Vivek Ramaswamy. You know, as I've been saying this for a while, Republicans lie just a little bit differently now than they have in the past. For instance, Vivek was at a campaign stop in Iowa, and here's how it was portrayed by the campaign. Crazy people at a coffee shop were yelling slurs and swearing at poor Vivek. They were protesting and they were angry. And then the protesters, they got into their vehicle and they rammed into the campaign car and then sped off. There evidently was, people at this campaign stop. There were people getting coffee at the coffee shop. There was a woman who hit the car, but the police, say, no, what are you talking about? And look, it's one of those things where you go, the facts kind of matter, because Vivek is driven around in a Ford Expedition, probably one of the largest vehicles on the road. And the riotous woman, the protester, the evil swine, she viciously rammed his Expedition with a Honda Civic. And you go, wait a second, that math doesn't add up. Now, if you would have said, hey, he was driving the Honda Civic and, some crazy Karen got into an Expedition and hit him. No, you go, okay, I got that. That makes sense. But in that kind of a fight, giant, no, that's not. Oh, and did I mention he wasn't even in the car? So this is one of those things, they just lie a little differently. And the thing that gets me is, what we're seeing right now is the lying is ramping up and the rhetoric is getting a lot more desperate. They're ramping up the hate speech. They're ramping up the calls for violence. They're ramping up the division because they know they're in trouble. Republicans know they're in big trouble. They know that the clown show that's going on in the House is not good for them. They know that the 91 indictments of their presidential candidate is not good for them. They know that the more Trump gets into deep hot water, the more desperate, the more the cornered rat will attack. That's not good for them. So they're kind of, they're kind of setting the stage for what they hope possibly will come, which is violence and insurrection and all kinds of stuff down the road. And I look at this guy, this Greg Gutfeld, who I cannot stand. But he went on this bizarre rant about how elections don't work and society's in peril. And, it's because chaos, because election doesn't matter. And he rambles on this whole, certain people get criminal mulligans, saying that, those people get special treatment. But, those of us who on January 6th, broke into the Capitol and committed crimes, they don't give us a mulligan. No, you committed crimes. you did the crime. Do the time. But he goes on all of these right wing, just these whiny complaints. And he comes to the meat and potatoes of it, saying that we have to change our lives to accommodate the risks wherever we go, because according to him, our cities are burning cesspools and there's crime everywhere and there's all kinds of stuff. Even though I'm sure he lives in the city, we have to move out for the sake of the safety of our families and our own safety. Playing on that frame that all of the cities are burning, and they're not. But he goes on to say this, and this is the part that caught my attention. He said, we had a war over slavery. We knew, and I'm not sure who we is, because I don't think he and his ilk would have known that slavery was inhumane and immoral. But he said, we knew slavery was inhumane and immoral, but somehow we couldn't solve slavery peacefully. It was an evil, but one side refused to acknowledge it was evil because it was too big of an admission for them to make. Doesn't that feel that way now? That this defiant refusal to reverse this decline argues against the survival of a country. He asks, what does that leave you with? It leaves you with the need to make war to bring peace. If that is not Orwellian, I don't know what is. He goes on to say, because you have a side that cannot change. Because then that means the admission that their beliefs have been corrupt all the time. And you go, yeah, you're pushing the big lie, which every court that your people appointed has said is a big lie. You continue to push conspiracy theory that there are no facts. You continue to push myth and idiocy. The cities are burning. They're all burning. No. You go to any major city in this country and yeah, you're going to find crime areas. And those are the places where the poverty is. But he goes on to say, so in a way, you have to force them to surrender. So he's basically calling for civil war. He's calling for violence in the streets. And, you know, someone says, whoa, we don't need a civil war. One of the other people on the show, no, we need elections. We need people to vote. And he loses his mind. Going, elections don't matter. Elections don't work. He goes on this bizarre rant. We've got crime everywhere. We have no border. Every facet of society is in peril or in chaos. And as I'm watching this, I'm thinking about all of the people who I know consume this every day. And this is the exact rhetoric I get from them, because this is what they're feeding them. This is what the Fox viewer, this is what the right wing, what the Republican viewer is getting a heavy dose of daily. This kind of outrage candy, this kind of, alternative fact. And it got me thinking that, these folks want violence because they know they're in trouble. They know that if they continue doing what they're doing, the sleeping majority of this country, the people who don't always pay attention to politics, the people who live their lives and then a couple of weeks before the election start turning on the channels, they're going to start paying attention now. And that's not good for them, because the Republican Party's actually in chaos. So when you have Trump really escalating the rhetoric, especially on immigration, saying, they're poisoning the blood of our country, which, wow, let's go with that. Let's just go with plain wow. And this guy going, election, he said elections don't work. If this isn't prepping us for, we don't need elections. We can have a strong man come in. It'll be fine. We tried the democracy thing. It was cute for a couple of hundred years. We gave it the old college try. Time to move on. The adults have to take over, because you citizens, you unwashed masses, you just don't get it. You just don't get it. And this is one of those weird kind of moments where you go, when do we put these people in their place? When does that sleeping majority wake up and say, this is too far. This is too crazy. This is way out of bounds. Let's get the last thought on this from Alice. We got Alice on line one. Give us your last thought, Alice.
They're all insane, Rick. They're all insane. I read an article about that too, and I thought, he's jumped the shark. He is definitely trying to incite people. But, you know, I guess they didn't learn their lesson the first time around. So I guess they want the Civil War 2.0. Have a good evening, Rick.
Thanks, Allison. No, and but you know, here's the thing. I've known the Red Hats for a very long time, even before they were Red Hats. They've been preparing for this for decades, wanting a reason. This is just giving a reason for what they've always wanted. Because they don't really believe in democracy. They don't really believe in the principles of life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. They don't really believe in individual liberty. They talk about it, but they don't really believe in it for everyone. Theirs, yes. For them, but not for anyone else. And this is where the rest of us, the sane, rational majority, had better start paying attention, because they're saying the crazy stuff. They're saying the crazy stuff out loud and loud. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. It's going to get weird because they're getting desperate, and even more desperate by the day. Right back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1917. That was the day civil rights leader Fannie Lou Hamer was born in Montgomery County, Mississippi. She was the youngest of 20 children. Her parents were sharecroppers, and she began working in the fields at the age of 6. By the age of 12, Fannie had to drop out of school to sharecrop to meet the needs of her family. Marrying in 1944, she and her husband continued to work as sharecroppers on a plantation near Ruleville. After decades of abject poverty and Southern political repression, Fannie Lou Hamer joined up with voter registration activists in 1962. When she and 17 others traveled to Indianola to register, Fannie was fired from her job and driven from the plantation she had worked at for decades. She began working with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and played a central role in organizing Freedom Summer. In a short time, Fannie was repeatedly arrested, beaten, and shot at for her activism. She suffered kidney damage after police beat her near to death in a Winona, Mississippi jail as she traveled home from a literacy workshop. By 1964, she helped to found the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, which challenged the all-white delegation to the Democratic Convention. President Lyndon Johnson was so threatened by live testimony she was giving before the convention's Prudential Committee that he organized an emergency press conference to preempt the broadcast. When the committee attempted a backroom deal to seat just 2 MFDP delegates with no voting rights, Hamer and other delegates left in disgust. Hamer continued her activism, but her life was tragically cut short in 1977 from hypertension and breast cancer. She was just 59. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
In the mid-1800s, a new political party flared up in America, posing as an alternative to both the Democratic and Republican parties. Xenophobic and nativist, it was extremely secretive about its specific structure, motive, and agenda. Indeed, members were instructed to say, "I know nothing," when asked about details. Thus, it was quickly dubbed the Know Nothing Party. In 1856, it nominated Millard Fillmore as its presidential nominee, but he was reticent to talk about the party and even unwilling to proclaim that he was a member. He lost, and the Know Nothing soon withered. But now, here comes another alternative party with secretive motives and backers. Labeling themselves No Labels, this group ought to be named the Nothing Party, for it offers nothing of substance to voters. Its so-called common-sense agenda is fluffier than cotton candy, yet it's trying to run a third-party candidate in next year's presidential race. Why? Follow the money. That's not easy to do, though, for this gaggle of conservative corporatists slyly incorporated as a nonprofit social welfare outfit, a deceit that lets it hide the names of its political funders from the public. The New Republic, however, got records revealing that No Labels is a fat cat front, with Texas billionaire Republican Harlan Crow leading the way. Who? Crow is the political patron who has secretly been lavishing luxury gifts and cash on Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, who in turn has embraced Crow's plutocratic positions in court cases. This is Jim Hightower saying that same plutocratic agenda appears to be fueling No Label's third-party presidential push, for these rich politicos know that a milquetoast spoiler candidate would most likely draw independent moderates from Joe Biden, giving Crow and company another GOP corporate presidency. It's a cynical game, but that's how they play it.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, on October 11th, on Wednesday the 11th, the Stop Trump Summit, America in Crisis, will be happening in New York and online. We'll be able to get things online. The New Republic is hosting one of the most exciting events of the season, the Stop Trump Summit. They'll examine the disasters of Trump's first term, the state of the legal cases against him, his own strange psychology and that of his MAGA followers, the messaging and polling on his 2024 campaign, everything concerned American citizens want to know about making sure he never takes office again. The day-long summit will gather the New Republic readers and enthusiastic New Yorkers and area supporters in a large-scale informal strategy session with some of the high-profile personalities, people like Michael Cohen, George Conway, Robert De Niro, Molly Jong-Fast, Don Lemon, Tara McGowan, Joel Payne, Jamie Raskin, Al Sharpton. The list goes on and on. Mary L. Trump, Randy Weingarten. It goes on and on and on. And one of the people who will most certainly be there is the guy who's put it all together. And that's why I've asked Michael Tomasky to come talk with us. He is the editor of The New Republic, TNR.com, the website. They are the folks putting on the Stop Trump Summit. Michael, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me, Rick. Really appreciate it.
So what's the point behind this? Obviously to stop Trump, but why now?
Well, we're approaching the 2024 campaign season. We've already been in it, I guess, but now we're starting to get into the thick of it. The first primary is only a few months away. And it's campaign time. You know, by an old clock, this wasn't campaign time, but now it is. And it's time to start ringing the alarm bell and telling people, hey, you got to pay attention. You know, you can't go to sleep on this. This election is not only the most important one that we've had in the United States for a while, but if the wrong guy wins, it actually could be the last one we have for a little while. So we want people to know that, and we want the New Republic to be very clearly on the side of ringing that bell and of telling people, you know, wake up. We've really got to take this very seriously, and we've got to know the stakes in this election. And that's what this summit is about.
Yeah. Yesterday I used a quote from a Harvard professor of government, Daniel Ziblatt is his name. He said, if you want to know what it looks like when democracy is in trouble, this is what it looks like. And it should set off alarm bells that something's not right. And the fact that you've got a guy under 91 felony indictments going to be the Republican nominee for president. I don't know. The fact that we've ousted a speaker, the fact that it doesn't seem like the Republican Party can do anything other than cause chaos. Something's not right. Democracy's in trouble.
Democracy's in big trouble. The Republican Party can't do anything but chaos. And we can see that, you know, they're not going to replace Kevin McCarthy with a guy who's, a moderate who has relationships with Democrats. That's the farthest thing from their minds. They're going to replace Kevin McCarthy, who was already a pretty extreme rightist, with somebody who's even a more extreme rightist. So that's the Republican Party. And then there's Donald Trump himself. And the story that just broke today, Rick, that I know you saw, of him giving away these nuclear submarine secrets to an Australian citizen, to a citizen of another country, you just imagine Hillary Clinton done something like that. Just imagine if Barack Obama had done something like that. But it's just going to wash right off of him with his supporters. It's infuriating and it's vexing, but there is a segment of the American population that still is rational and that still can be spoken to and that will decide this election and to whom we can say, this man is unacceptable. And we're aiming for that slice of the electorate. And that's who we're trying to talk to, as well as our base. We want to galvanize our base, of course. But we want to talk to those people who can be persuaded to say, no, we can't cross that bridge.
No, this is important. This is really important. It's important that you're doing this kind of, you know, broad-based educating and you know, putting things out for our media to report on, because they're certainly not going to go out and find this stuff on their own. They've got to be spoon-fed, evidently, or if they're going to pick up at all. The story that you talked about, we talked about yesterday on the program, and Fox News still has yet to mention the fact that this happened.
Yeah, of course they do. And they probably mentioned Hunter Biden 40,000 times in the meantime. And, you know, this, you mentioned Fox News. I mean, that media is really responsible for a lot of what's going on in this country these days. And, you know, I hate to give them credit for their power, but, you know, it's, you know, these jobs numbers come out this morning, Friday morning, 336,000 jobs, about double what was expected. A really good jobs report. How do you think that was reported on Fox? Do you think they said that was a good jobs report? I didn't watch Fox, so I don't know, but I can't imagine that it was. Nothing Joe Biden does could get any credit in that whole media ecosphere of the right wing. And it really colors how people think about things.
Yeah, but to be fair, CNN Business didn't paint it as good either. In fact, their headline was, here's how it's bad for you.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't shock me. And, you know, CNN, you know, has its own set of problems. They had that Trump town hall at the behest of their, you know, executives. And we could talk a long time about that. I'm sure you have with your listeners. But yeah, I mean, it just proves the point that there's a right-wing media that does nothing but attack Biden, Democrats, liberalism, liberals all day, will never say anything good about any of those entities I just mentioned. And then there's a mainstream media, which is not right-wing, but is not as reflexively defensive of Biden and Democrats and liberals as the right-wing media is critical of them. So you have a real imbalance. So you take your average guy who lives in, a swing state. Let's say he lives in Appleton, Wisconsin. And, you know, he has he doesn't watch much cable news, but he has a coworker who watches a lot of Fox and another coworker who watches a lot of CNN. What gets through to that guy is mostly negative stuff about the Democrats.
Well, that's all it is. I mean, and you have this media culture that we have to present both sides, even if one side is lying. And one of the frames that we've been talking about here on the program for a while is, you know, this generation of Republicans lie just a little bit differently. In the old days, at least there was a kernel of truth to the lies. Now the lies seem to be, well, we're in the world of alternative facts and alternative realities. So they're just flat out lies at this point.
Well, this is a very important point. The lies are not just untruths. The lies are the opposite of the truth. The lies are the opposite of the truth. And that's a very important thing for people to wrap their heads around. And that's not just a typical politician's lie. That is a fascist lie, okay? When Joseph Goebbels in 1939 said that Poles were raping German women along the border, that was not just a lie. That was the opposite of the truth. And when Donald Trump says the things he says the opposite of the truth. Okay, so John Kelly came out this week and said to Jake Tapper of CNN that yes, Donald Trump did say that hideous thing at his own son's, John Kelly's son's, graveside in Arlington National Cemetery. I don't get it. What's in it for them? Donald Trump, when that story came out from Jeff Goldberg in The Atlantic in 2020, he didn't just deny it and say, I never said that. He said the opposite of the truth. He said at a rally in Pennsylvania, what kind of monster would say that? Okay, so he didn't just deny it. He turned it around and said the opposite of the truth. That's a fascist lie. So we've gone from just basic politician lies to fascist lies. And that is really dangerous and nefarious. And people believe fascist lies, history shows us. And it's really, I don't know what to do about it.
No, and this is where having a media culture that's hell-bent on, we have to tell both sides, even if one side is actually lying, that's a problem.
The media still doesn't know. You're exactly right. They still don't know how to figure this out and how to deal with it. I think they do understand. You know, they have learned since 2016 to say that such and such a claim Donald Trump makes isn't true. And that's good. That's a step in the right direction.
Yeah. But like, give you an example. You know, he was talking about the, in Philadelphia, you had some looting that went on. He goes and gives a speech and says, we should just start shooting these people. And it was like nobody bothered to mention that he's talking about executing people. Why not? Let's start shooting people.
Yeah, exactly. People who haven't been arrested, haven't had a trial, don't deserve a presumption of innocence that he himself is depending on right now in four different courtrooms. Yeah, it's just completely mind-boggling. And what's incredible, Rick, is that so many people just buy this. I really couldn't believe the revelations from Kelly this week, because that's something that you would really think that conservatives would care about. The reputation.
Yeah.
Of people who have served this country.
Yeah, but that's not new, Michael. That's not we knew that story existed. And this is one of these things. I had a conversation with somebody this week and I said, "Look, we know this stuff already. It's just now being reconfirmed. And the other part of this is, we know this little bit. We hear all of these horrible things. He's given away nuke secrets. He's got classified material in the bathroom. He's left it all over ballrooms. All of these horrible things that we know about. Imagine all the stuff we still don't know yet. Imagine how bad it could be, especially, given his defense in the fraud trial, which was, I can't possibly overinflate my properties because I can always go to the Saudis and they'll pay it. If that's reality, what has he given them that's the reality?
Yeah, exactly. And what's he, what's he doing with these secrets? What's he doing with these military secrets? Does he have them around just to be able to brag to his friends at Mar-a-Lago? That's probably the answer. But
that's my thought.
But, but what if the occasion presented itself that he could make money from? He always wants to make money from anything.
Yeah, he cannot be trusted. Let's get back to the summit, the Stop Trump Summit, America in Crisis. It's on Wednesday, October 11th in New York. For our listeners around the country that can't make it to New York, how do we participate?
Yeah, everybody can live stream it. We've had loads of people signing up for the live stream. TNR, the New Republic, TNR.com/events. And if you go to that site, the first thing you'll see is the Stop Trump Summit, and you click on that, and that will take you to a place where you can get tickets, and you click on get tickets, and you can buy tickets to attend the event or just to stream it. And to stream it is free. To attend, we're charging a little bit, but to stream it is free. But I really want to emphasize, Rick, I do hope that people in the New York area can come and see, Mary Trump, can see Al Sharpton, can see all the people you mentioned earlier, Jamie Raskin, and all these panels on Stuart Stevens and George Conway and Michael Cohen and so many people who are going to be just delivering some truth about what we're up to here, what we're up against here, and what we can do. And we're really excited about this. I think it's a pretty big deal event, and I thank you for bringing me on to talk about it, and I really hope we can see as many people as we can there.
Now, look, the right wing does all these kind of, you know, get-togethers, CPAC and, you know, Turning Point USA and all these crazy summits. It's finally good to see someone going, hey, let's try and save democracy. Let's try and save the future of this country instead of powwows to destroy things. So I give you credit. I hope folks will attend TNR.com, the website. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at that. But, Michael, I appreciate you sharing some time. I'd love to have you come back and give us the post summit and help us figure out how we actually do stop Trump from taking office once again.
Well, I'd love to come back and, you know, thank you for what you do, because, you know, we need to keep this fight going.
Good stuff. Thanks so much. Michael Tomasky, he is the editor over at the New Republic. Again, TNR.com, the website. Want to hear your thoughts? Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1993. That was the day that President Bill Clinton signed into law reforms to the Hatch Act. The Hatch Act was passed in 1939. It limited the political activity of federal employees. The act was passed due to accusations of alleged political cronyism by Democrats on New Deal projects. Half a century later, Congress loosened the restrictions. In his speech before signing the reform, President Clinton explained the changes, saying, quote, "The Federal Employees Political Activities Act, which I am about to sign, will permit federal employees and postal workers on their own time to manage campaigns, raise funds, and hold positions within political parties. Still, there will be some reasonable restrictions. They wouldn't be able to run for partisan political office themselves, for example." President Clinton described the importance of the changes, saying, quote, "We've been supporting democracy throughout the world, but here in our own country, millions of our own citizens have been denied one of the most basic democratic rights, the right to participate in the political process." He ended his remarks by saying, quote, "I look forward to the infusion and federal and postal employee energy, expertise, and dedication into our political system that this bill makes possible. Today, under the regulations of the Act, most employees can assist in voter registration drives, attend fundraisers, contribute money, and distribute campaign literature. They can even run for office in nonpartisan elections. They cannot, however, use their jobs to influence elections or engage in political activity while on the clock. Today, there remains a balancing act between protecting the free speech of federal employees and keeping the government politically neutral." Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So TNR.com, the website, if you want to take a look at the summit. And look, I highly suggest it. It's well worth at least getting the information, especially, you know, the heavy hitters that they've got who are going to come and speak and talk about what it's going to take for us to hold on to our democracy, because democracy is most certainly under assault. You know, here's the thing. The sad reality is you've got a lot of former Republicans, the anti-Trump Republicans, who are kind of just, you know, going, they're throwing in the towel, you know, going, yep, he's going to be the nominee. There's no stopping them, because the Republicans cannot seem to quit, can't seem to quit the cult, can't do it. I'll tell you. Well, we'll see where this goes. Let's go to the phones. We got Bob from Silicon Valley on line one. Bob, how are you today?
Pretty good. I had to go to the South Bay, San Jose Kaiser. They put me on blood thinners, so I have to go to the laboratory twice a week. And so I came to the South San Jose thing, and there were a couple hundred people on the sidewalk. And you should have heard all the honking. Amazing. And as I went inside, because they really have to have my blood sample for this blood thinner thing.
Right.
It was pretty gloomy in there, pretty empty. They're largely shut down. They had a few things that they handle for emergencies. And this blood test that I have to have the twice a week is one of those things that qualifies that. But I can tell you, it was pretty gloomy inside, and outside the spirits were great, and all the honking and horns was amazing.
Yeah, you're talking about the fact that you've got 75,000 Kaiser Permanente workers who are on strike, went on strike for 3 days. They will be back very soon. So what do you think about what's going on?
Well, let's say today is the third day, and let's say the spirits were really great, and I introduced myself to the people there, and because in a million years ago, I was a member of SEIU, and I was a shop steward, a chief steward, and a negotiating team member, and I let them know that, and I understand that, you know, the issues, it's not all money, it's also working conditions.
Yep.
And these people are the frontline people during COVID. They were working because they had to deal with people, but they were being stressed incredibly. And staffing is part of the issue.
Yep.
I guess if you really drill down, the price of housing is so high here that people have to commute from like an hour away or even more. They haven't been able to fill some of the vacancies, so they were calling people from agencies to come in. Well, those people, these are like various people with licenses, you know, like licensed technicians and RNs and so on. There's a whole bunch of different specialties that all require licenses. So, yeah, the people that come in from the agencies have the licenses, but they don't know if something goes on which extension number to call, you know, that kind of stuff, the detail stuff. So the people that are there that are the real workers are the ones that have to make all the decisions, and they're being burned out too. So I understand the issues, but I can tell you the spirit out there on the sidewalk of about 200 people was really amazing.
Yeah, I mean, these are people we told they were heroes. They were essential.
Oh, absolutely. And I am completely with. They are the heroes.
You know, and they internalized
that. The spirits are good, and I think, with just my gut feeling, is Kaiser's waking up a little bit about overworking and short staffing.
No, and this is what I said, you know, the other day. I said, look, the reality is I don't know why Kaiser would push to this point when they're going to have to give in, or it's going to cost them a whole boatload of money, even more than they would spend by giving the union everything they wanted, because the union isn't asking for anything completely out of bounds. There's nothing outrageous in their requests.
That's precisely the impression I got, too, that they're being actually very reasonable, considering how they came through COVID with a lot of, I guess you could say, a lot of people at the front lines being exposed to people that were contagious as they came in.
Yeah.
So I give them a lot of credit for that, you know, and working through all that. So, yeah,
it would be hard for
me to do it.
No, good for you. Good for you to get out there and stand with those folks, Bob. Good stuff.
Oh, well, Rick, as a member of that same union, although in another branch of it, as a shop steward, a chief steward, a negotiating team member, I could not stop there. I had to be there.
I hear
anyway,
you.
Thank you, Rick. I thought you'd appreciate
it. I do.
A little
thank
bit
you.
Of good
appreciate
news.
It. No, and this is the thing that gets me. I looked at the demands. They're crazy. They aren't extreme. They're really reasonable. In fact, I would argue too reasonable. Now, I love the fact that Bob got out there and adopted a striker for the day. I love the fact that he got out there and walked with those folks and talked with them. I love that. And in fact, we all should be adopting a striker. We should all be getting out on these picket lines and understanding what it means to get out there and fight for something. And win something. That's how we're going to move this economy in a better direction. That's how we're going to rebuild and revive the middle class by reunionizing. That's how we're going to reunite this country. I've been saying it for the longest time. That's the reality of where we are. And this is the thing that gets me. You know, you look at all of these strike scenarios. None of these unions have asked for anything that these companies cannot pay. They haven't. What they've asked for are things the companies don't want to pay. Now, that's the difference. They don't want to share. They don't want to divvy the pie differently because they've had it so good for so long. You think about from the Reagan era till now, you have had labor under control. The firing of the Patco workers, the shot heard across the boardroom, meant that it was open season on workers. The fact that you could then go permanent, replace people at economic strikes, you could do all kinds of stuff. And you always had, you know, a pro-corporate government that was willing to, or a pro-business government that was willing to go, yeah, you know, screw those working people. This is why, again, I'm a big fan of what Joe Biden's doing. Because there's a chance here. There's an opportunity. We're in a moment right now where we can rebuild and revive that prosperous working class that our grandparents built.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.